Please report. I am Robin Cocky. I'm counsel for appellant EW. The case comes to you from an order of the district court granting the summary judgment motion of the defendant deputy. The court's opinion was cryptic. Its holdings were that, as a matter of law, handcuffing the plaintiff could not have constituted excessive force, and in any event, the deputy would be entitled to qualified immunity. However, on this record, the jury quite reasonably could have held that handcuffing the diminutive, compliant 14-year-old girl.
How long was she handcuffed?
2 minutes, Your Honor.
2 minutes?
According to the deputy, and I think that I don't dispute it, but
there's no evidence in the record that she had any injury.
No, sir.
Huh?
No, Your Honor.
There isn't any.
There is not.
When did she start crying after the? She did start crying after she was handcuffed.
I think the evidence is that she began crying immediately after she was handcuffed. The record isn't clear as to when she stopped crying. The evidence is that the deputy handcuffed her. She burst into tears, said, "I don't want to go to jail. I'm sorry." And at that point, they said, "Okay." So they took off the cuffs, and that was pretty much it.
So your claim of excessive force, if I understand it correctly, is no injury, no physical injury from it, but the fact of handcuffing?
Precisely.
Okay.
Thank you, Your Honor. The record also, I think, would establish not only that this was clearly a violation of the Fourth Amendment's prohibition on excessive force, but also it was sufficiently clear that any hypothetical reasonable officer in the deputy's shoes would have known better. I'll start, if I might, with the Fourth Amendment analysis, which
is that the standard? Would have known better or...
Yeah,
it is clearly established.
Clearly
phrase
established.
Phrase it in the language that's there, right. Because that's kind of important.
Right. The language in the cases is that the violation has to be established with sufficient clarity that a reasonable law enforcement officer in the defendant's shoes would have realized the conduct was prohibited.
And where is the source for that? What I would do is just look at the Supreme Court of this circuit, or can we look anywhere else?
Well, of course, Your Honor, you can look to find what you think is the best
no,
law.
Oh, no.
But
we've got defined places. The court's been very specifically what we can do there.
Well, I didn't mean to exclude the Supreme Court for that.
You can't.
Of course not.
We know the Supreme Court, and we know if it's the circuit law that applies. Can we look anywhere else?
You can,
sir. Excuse me, I'm not sure you can.
Well, I don't know of any law to the contrary in this circuit. I think the standard for qualified immunity is pretty well defined. I don't know that there's much.
What makes it clearly established in this circuit?
What makes, you mean the Fourth Amendment violation,
yes.
Clearly established here. Okay. Well, the Supreme Court precedent, which lays down the applicable standard, said it's an objectively reasonable standard. And you look at three criteria. First, you look at the severity of the underlying offense. Secondly, you look at whether the suspect presents a risk of violence, of harm, to the arresting officer or to others. And thirdly, you look at what I call the sort of fight or flight factor, whether the suspect is resisting or presents a risk of escape. That's the analysis which has been in existence since the Supreme Court laid it down in the 80s, and I would, if I might, just sort of walk through it under the relatively undisputed facts in this case. The offense occurred on January 9th. The district court was mistaken in saying it was the 7th. It was the 9th. And the incident was an altercation on the school bus involving two fifth grade girls who were both kicked off the bus.
I thought it was the 5th and the 3rd.
I thought it was two fifth graders.
I thought it was she's in the fifth grade and the other girl on the bus was a third grader, but I could be wrong.
I'm embarrassed to say.
About that.
Well, I'm not sure. But it was a school bus altercation. They both got kicked off the bus for 3 days. The school system did not suspend my client, didn't expel her, didn't put any protective measures In effect, she was simply returned to the general school population, suggesting that, at least in the eyes of the school system, this was not a serious offense, or at least my client did not present any danger to anybody else. In fact, when she was interrogated on the 9th, 3 days later, they had to get her out of class to question her. So on these facts, the jury quite reasonably could conclude that this was not regarded by the schools, at least, as a severe offense. When you look at the second factor, which is what, if any, danger the suspect presents to the arresting officer or to the public, what you see is the following. You have an 85-pound, 4'4", 10-year-old girl in an office with the door shut with three adults present, one of whom is a deputy sheriff who is 5'4" and outweighs her by 60 pounds. There is no evidence in the record that she resisted or made any threats or was in any way uncooperative.
Well, the record is, though, that she, I thought the record is, that she was sort of non-repentant,
correct,
sort of obdurate, maybe is the word.
I think that is an accurate characterization, Your Honor. And in fact, I think the deputy said in her affidavit that that was the sole reason she handcuffed, well, the principal reason she handcuffed her.
Well, she was doing what the, I guess, the Fifth Amendment allows you to do. Right? She didn't have to confess, or are you required to be recalcitrant? That's what freedoms are in America, right?
You
apologize, but right, is that right?
I think that's right.
Yeah.
And I think it is.
It's like otherwise, I always thought about when judges say, well, did they cooperate? That's really objectionable. You don't have to cooperate, because otherwise punish somebody for not confessing that they did something.
Right.
Yeah. But go ahead.
Yeah.
I just want to be sure. Point of my question wasn't whether she was cooperative or not.
I understand.
I think at least the evidence put forth by the officer is the officer thought, I don't want, maybe she had an attitude.
Right.
That plays into it, that she thought, contrasted completely to how she acted later. It was my point.
I would agree with your point, Your Honor. I think the deputy was pretty explicit in her affidavit in saying that my client took the position that the other girl started, and that she wasn't sorry. And instead of saying, well, go to the blackboard and write, I won't do this again 100 times, she instead decided to put handcuffs on her to produce, you know, remorse, and it was very effective. But certainly focusing
on... She didn't say she put handcuffs on her to get her to apologize. Didn't she say she put them on in anticipation of transportation?
Well, actually, if I might, forgive me, but just consulting her affidavit,
okay.
The deputy said that...
You'll be back up. I don't want
right.
to
speak. Right, so I don't want
to... I thought the record is she did it to transport her under the policy.
Right.
The policy doesn't completely control. But later she said she, after I did that, basically getting ready to transport her, and I was a little concerned because of her, the way she was acting, as for transportation, that then she just, which I certainly understand, a 10-year-old girl sort of crying and saying,
right,
I'm sorry. She then said in response to that, basically she changed her mind about what to do. I know your claim is she did it just to get the confession, but I don't think that's what the officer suggests she did it.
I forgive me for reading while you were talking, but I just scanned the affidavit, and she says explicitly that as soon as remorse was demonstrated, she decided, oh, I'm not going to take her into custody. I'll release her to her parents, took off the cuffs. That's paragraphs 13 and 14.
Right.
But I now agree with you. In my view, she implies, but you're right, she doesn't say explicitly that I did this to produce remorse. And she did reference the policies of the department with regard to juveniles, and the policies were attached to the affidavit.
Let me ask this. Do you
Certainly.
Think is your, by the way, let me say this.
Yes, Your Honor.
The optics on all of this to me, they're terrible. You think about a 10-year-old child being handcuffed, that's not a good thing.
Right.
Doesn't mean it's unconstitutional necessarily, But do you, is your concern that she used the handcuffs, or that she used the handcuffs for an improper motive, or both?
Both, Your Honor.
Okay.
As I understand the constitutional analysis, the reason that, using handcuffs as any use of force has to be justified by these three factors: the severity of the offense, whether there's any danger presented to the officer or others, and thirdly, whether there's a fight or flight risk. And I, you know,
what about for transportation, though? What if there is, well, that's what the policy is, just for safety,
right,
for transportation? What about that?
Well, if the policy contemplates the possible use for that purpose, it appears at pages 47 through 48 of the record. And what it says is, well, you look at the same things the Constitution tells you to look at, according to the Supreme Court. You look at the physique of the arrested juvenile, reputation for violence, conduct at the time of arrest, any arrest record. It says if
could this be bad? I'm not saying that it is, but could it be bad judgment which falls short of a constitutional violation?
It could be, but I submit that it isn't, because when you apply this Fourth Amendment analysis prescribed by the Supreme Court, Deputy Dole gets his conduct flunks on all three points. The severity of the offense doesn't warrant this.
She thought it did, though, but you just think objectively she couldn't think that.
Right. It's an objectively reasonable standard, and the cases say you're not supposed to look at the subjective thought process.
In this record, there's no indication that they thought they needed cuffs to control her?
No. None whatsoever, no. Your Honor. And in fact, I think in our early exchange, Judge Wynn established that this happened for a grand total of maybe 2 minutes, and it occurs to...
Oh, I didn't establish that.
I'm sorry.
You said that.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I'm all discombobulated here. I apologize.
He asked the question how long she was handcuffed.
Right.
You said 2 minutes.
Right.
I think the record reflects.
Yes. But it was 2 minutes. According to the deputy, it was 2 minutes. I'm not aware of any contraindications of the record. So we'll assume it was 2 minutes, and it occurs to me, well, if there was a sufficient risk presented by this 10-year-old to warrant handcuffing her, how could it vaporize in 2 minutes? In fact,
she suggests either expressly or implicitly that it was the change of attitude that she saw.
Right, yes, she said.
The little girl was... You know, I'm using my word, obdurate, or she is concerned, or she basically said, and once I decided to transport, I handcuffed her, and then she just basically sort of became a little 10-year-old girl crying upset,
right,
and that's when she went, I changed my mind on how I was going to do it.
Yeah, that's exactly the way I read it. And but I would point out that, you know, again, when you go through this sort of three-part analysis prescribed by the Supreme Court.
You just don't think it can be justified on any of the
grounds. Not on any grounds. And, you know, you see three adults in a small room with a 10-year-old child. I mean, what's she going to do? I mean, where's she going to go?
The way I'm seeing your case, you spent a lot of time here arguing whether this is a constitutional violation.
Right.
And you're probably getting some force with it. But the Supreme Court has made clear we don't even have to look at that. We can assume that and go straight to that second one, which is whether this is a clearly established.
Yes.
You don't have a case in the Fourth Circuit in Maryland. You don't have one in the United States Supreme Court that actually deals with this situation.
Now, I can't find a handcuffing case. Right?
And so when you get to that situation now,
right,
I'm not forecasting too much, but
right,
I believe what we're going to hear when we stand up is a lot of clearly established stuff that's getting ready to be talked about here. You spent a lot of time on constitutional law.
Right.
Which,
right,
I'm okay. Spend it all you want to on it, but the way these cases have gone,
right,
this is really a case that should focus on the clearly established prong of this.
Agreed.
As to whether this officer, who's in there, and she sees what appears to be, some have described as a pretty violent assault.
Right.
Judge Shedd says fifth grade versus third grade. That might not sound like it's significant, but it does sound pretty daggum significant to me.
They were both fifth graders.
So you want to get
what I
that
thought.
Back.
Yeah, direct,
you want to get that back together.
Yeah. They're, right, both, yeah,
they're both fifth graders.
Yeah.
They were both fifth graders. I thought, counsel, you should know that.
Yeah, I should. You're right. You're right.
But you see where I'm going? When you come back up, I think you ought to spend some time talking about this clearly established prong of this case.
Right.
Because, you know, I think it's a difficult case. It is, just Shedd pointed out, no one is going to think very kindly that any officer off this, a 95-pound, 4-foot little kid that breaks out crying as soon as you put handcuffs, two or three days after this has happened.
Right.
There's not a whole lot of danger in that room. That's bad.
Right.
But the question that comes up is, and we've had some bad cases, is even if it is bad, is it clearly established for this officer who's in there, called there by the principal for a situation? Because otherwise the principal would handle it. Why would you call the police in?
Right.
And you call them in, and the police has some function. Clearly there's been an assault. There's
right.
no question it's assault. Clearly you can arrest for an assault. No question
right.
about that.
Why?
The question is, what's the degree of force that's used?
Right.
And was it minimal? And the handcuffing in of itself left not one injury on the child.
Right.
So that's you've got extra time, I know. Judge Gregory is looking to permit you to go further. It's not for my benefit, but I'm saying when you come back, you might want to use some of it.
Let me say, too, now, the record will be, we'll get it figured out, but in the officer's affidavit, she says in paragraph 3, the attacker was a fifth grader. The other student was a third grader.
Right.
So I don't know, but I knew I'd seen it somewhere.
Right. Well,
maybe we'll.
Our allegations were that they were two fifth graders, and you know, I will confess, Chief Judge Gregory, that you know what I should have done is filed a counter affidavit saying no, they were both in fifth grade.
I don't know. I want you to know where from the record I got.
My fault. But if I might briefly respond to the question about my position on qualified immunity.
Yes, you may.
Thank you. The Fourth Circuit has, to my knowledge, never applied the Fourth Amendment in this fact scenario, handcuffs, children, and so on. Nor has it ever dealt with, like, you know, a case where the officer took, you know, billy club and whacked EW or somebody like that. Or I could go on and on, pepper spray. You know,
it's
so
not required
on.
To have the exact case, is it?
Precisely. Right. My point, respectfully, would be that the analysis is clear-cut. And the Ninth Circuit, they did it, you know, with a very similar scenario, this case that I kind of touted in my brief, which is CB versus City of Sonora, 2014 case, and they said as a matter of law that the officer doesn't get qualified immunity in this scenario when you're dealing with a juvenile who's compliant, who doesn't present a safety or flight risk, and it's, I won't say a no-brainer, but I mean it's really hard for anyone just applying common sense, much less constitutional jurisprudence, to see why it would be okay under these facts to handcuff a little girl in the principal's office who immediately bursts into tears. So thank you.
Thank you so much.
Of course.
Mr. Breeze.
Chief Judge Gregory, members of the court, John Breeds on behalf of the appellee, Deputy First Class Rosemary Dalgos. Following up with Judge Wynn's line of questioning.
Tell me how you want to approach this. Do you think this is a case? I mean, do you want to spend time talking about the constitutional violation?
Yes.
Or do you think that the clearly established prong is really a good place to hang this one?
I do, and I do that in light of what Judge Motz did. And I think his approach was appropriate in finding qualified immunity available to the officer at a minimum, simply because there is no...
But he said that after he said no violation.
Yes, he did.
So, and he asked you an alternative question. Do you want this or that? And you went, yes.
Yes. Yeah.
But which are you going to argue mainly is the question.
I guess what I'm saying is, if you read Judge Motz's opinion, he finds qualified immunity. So I'm basically reaching out here on the grounds of qualified immunity.
But he found no violation. And then he adds, as well, no qualified immunity.
He basically says in the order, she is at least entitled to qualified immunity. I read that as meaning, if there were a violation, she would still be entitled to qualified immunity because of the absence of clearly established precedent in this circuit or in the Supreme Court that prohibits the handcuffing of a juvenile.
No, but we'll just wait one second.
Yes, Your Honor.
His order says EW asserts claims for the use of excessive force in violation of federal and state law.
Yes.
However, on the facts as stated, no excessive force was employed.
Yeah.
That's no constitutional violation.
Now,
he then later goes on to say, as to the federal claims, she's at least entitled to qualified immunity, but that, but it doesn't really matter, but I don't think it's fair to say his ruling appears to me stated first, no excessive force.
You're correct.
That would mean no constitutional. Then he goes, but in any regard, certainly it's qualified immunity.
You're correct, Judge Chad. That is the language that he used. I'm taking Judge Wynn's predicate and saying that if we're looking at qualified immunity, yes, just as I urged below, there was no clearly established precedent at the time of these events or even now that would have prohibited Deputy Dalgos from effecting an arrest of a juvenile in a school setting.
You can assume a constitutional violation. You can assume there was a constitutional violation, but if it's not clearly established.
Correct. So we could even make that assumption, but the question would be, is the law settled? Was the law settled at that time? And the answer is absolutely not. There is no precedent in this circuit that prohibits the deputy from making an arrest of a juvenile in a school setting upon probable cause. That's what she had. And if you look at her affidavit, and this is in paragraph 9, where she says, based on all of the information, including viewing the videotape of the attack, I had established probable cause and decided to take EW into custody. I exercised my discretion per departmental procedure and handcuffed EW. Departmental procedure makes juveniles taken into custody for criminal-type offenses subject to the same security requirements as adults. There is nothing to show that clearly established law had deemed that conduct to be objectively unreasonable under the Fourth Amendment. We may disagree in hindsight as to the officer's approach, but certainly nothing in the law compelled her to act other than what she did.
All right, well, let's take the argument. Let's say the girl was 4 years old.
Yes.
You would say that wouldn't be clearly established either.
I would. What I would say...
Oh, your argument would be the same, wouldn't it?
It would be the same, except that the deputy, if she had been confronted with a 4-year-old, a 5-year-old, a 6-year-old, that certainly would have come into the decision-making process.
How so?
Simply because she would have been required to make an assessment as to whether or not the child even could understand the criminality of the conduct in question.
You're walking yourself into a situation that you
let him walk
into.
Let him walk.
It could have been a 6-month-old baby that they decided to do it to.
Oh,
that's
no.
Not exactly where you want to go with that.
Yes, he does. He's answered my question. He's answered. I follow what you're saying. You're saying it has to be an assessment, doesn't it?
There has to be an assessment.
And it's assessment of those three factors, isn't it?
No.
It's not?
No.
Well, then what would it be?
When you're dealing with juveniles, there is a case in Tennessee where the arrest was of an 8-year-old. And the court points out, just as in Maryland, there is no law that sets a minimum age for which someone can be arrested. However,
you're saying that once you can arrest someone, that automatically means you can handcuff them. Is that right? That seems that's where the logic where you're going.
I'm saying that under Fourth Amendment law, you have the discretion as an officer to handcuff an arrestee.
Right, and that's anybody, including a 4-year-old.
The officer has the discretion. This was not a case of a 4-year-old. This was a case of a 10-year-old.
There's no difference, though.
Here's
the point. That's why the analysis, there's no difference. The only difference is a number, because here, this was not in the race just die of the crime. Correct? It was 3 days later. Right?
Correct.
The little girl had gone to school 2 days before, afterwards.
Yeah.
She was in that. They call her into the office. Three adults are there. What makes the facts any different than a four-year-old in terms of control, threat, any of that? What makes the difference?
Again, we're not dealing with a four-year-old, and we weren't.
But what's the difference? I'm talking about the analysis. What's the difference in terms of how does it heighten under those three prongs the reasonableness of handcuffing her? Other than the age, is there any difference?
I think it's an incredible sliding scale. And if we were here talking about...
I'm not sure that's what it is. You need to look at the Purcell case. It's really a question of whether it is an obvious situation. And when you get in the realm of 4 years old, 6 months old, it becomes more obvious.
Yes.
So I'm not sure what your argument is going on that. I want to get into the sliding scale.
That is the case. And that was the eight-year-old, and the court was pointing out that, you know, does there come a point where a child is simply too young? But you can't look in the common law for an answer to that. So arguing about a 4-year-old or a 15-year-old, we had a 10-year-old, a fifth grader.
It's fair. It's absolutely fair to ask you questions about a 2-year-old or a 4-year-old because he's teasing out your view of qualified immunity. That's completely acceptable. That's what we do.
Would it
and
be,
it seems to me, you weren't really ready to answer that question.
Now, would it be objectively reasonable to handcuff and arrest a 2-year-old?
Well, you have to explain to us why you think it's not under your approach to what's clearly established. That's exactly the point. I'm not saying which side will come down, but that's what the chief judge was trying to get you to sort of explicate for him.
I think what I'm trying to say is there is no bright line. The courts have never said there is a certain age for which the individual isn't subject to arrest. However, if you're dealing with a child that's 5 or 4 or 2, or if you're dealing with a mentally disabled child, all of these circumstances would be taken into account. And if I were here...
Take into account for what? The discretion the officer uses or the constitutional violation?
Constitution. Whether or not that would be objectively reasonable. And to place a 2-year-old or a 4-year-old in handcuffs, I would suggest that you would have a strong argument that that was not objectively reasonable.
All right. I understand. Now, so you don't think it's the same thing you did in... The record won't show, but you winced and you said, oh, 4-year-old, I understand. You don't think that's just as severe with a 10-year-old under these circumstances? It's different, I agree. If there was a 10-year-old, the fight is going on, they just broke up, and then they're in the race just died of it, and she's fuming and still, and then 10-year-old, But that would be something in the fact you would consider, but here... The little girl is at school 3 days later, and what she's doing, I think this is a dangerous case because it's like, because you won't confess and tell us what you, you win some, but this is equitable, because you won't, we'll just go off and fall out. And the girl said, listen, the girl kicked me, and I defended myself. I don't see anything wrong with that. And I must admit, in terms of being in America, maybe in another country, that they don't have similar rights, you don't have to fall apart. You said, yes, I did get in a fight with her. She kicked me. That's why I did it. But they wanted to say, oh, my goodness, yes, you're here, so I did everything wrong. And then you wouldn't be handcuffed if you had acted like we wanted you to act. That's what makes our Constitution so brilliant. The point is this. The real definition of freedom is not to act like people expect you to act. That's the definition of freedom. Otherwise, you say, well, you get handcuffed unless you... And in this case, it was dangerous because they took them off after the girl went into tears. Now you're acting like a 10-year-old. I'm going to take the cuffs off of you.
Your Honor, what I would say in response is that if the deputy had acted as the deputies did in the City of Sonora case cited by the appellant, in Alexander versus Bostic, I would agree with you. In Sonora, it was an 11-year-old child with ADHD who had accommodations in place at the school to deal with the condition. The child, 11 years old, wasn't suspected of any criminal activity, and yet the child was handcuffed for 35 to 40 minutes, placed in a police car, never spoken to by the officer, and taken to a relative and released. Here, this officer acted based on probable cause of a crime, second-degree assault.
He had a fight with a girl on the bus.
Your Honor, the video...
I don't know how many people would have gotten out. I know I would have gotten out of school. Getting in a fight means that you're going to be arrested. I'm glad it wasn't that like that, even as terrible as the times were growing up, that was the rule, that was a crime, and you're going to be...
Your Honor,
a fight with a girl who kicked her.
Your Honor, if you look at the record...
I did look at it. I looked at the video several times.
The video, yes.
I've looked at it several times.
If you look, the child, who I'll describe as the victim, didn't kick anyone. According even to EW, what she did was step on her shoe. And for that, she was attacked not once, twice, with hands and feet on the bus.
Is that a question of fact?
No.
We don't have jurisdiction, do we? You just disputed that.
No.
I thought you have to...
Oh. That's in the record, Your Honor.
It's the record that the girl says she kicked her. Didn't she?
She says she stepped on her shoe.
Well, she didn't say she kicked her?
No, Your Honor.
I thought she did say she kicked her.
No, Your Honor. It all was about she stepped on my shoe. The other child denied it. And for that, she was attacked viciously, as you can see.
She says she stomped her foot.
Stomped her foot. If you look at the video, there isn't any of that. What there is simply a child sitting in a seat who is attacked and not resisting in any way or fighting back. That's what the record showed.
Well, let me just stop you for a second. I watched that video. I'm not saying this is my prerogative to do it. That wasn't a vicious attack, not by my estimation. Maybe you can say that I don't get to make that call. She did slap at, maybe kick at the other little girl. I don't think that was... That just sort of didn't meet my definition of vicious. Now, maybe you can say that I don't get to decide that, but I think if viciousness is required for your argument, we might have a discussion about it. But I won't say that. I don't think that attack was vicious. It was a... Quite frankly, I think it was a slap and kick fight between two little girls. That's what I think it was, number one. But I guess maybe that washes out if there's no claim that there wasn't probable cause.
There is not.
You think that washes it out?
That issue is off the table as to the reason for the seizure itself. We're limited to the handcuffing issue.
I was just challenging your definition.
Description. I would say in response that the charge was second-degree assault, which in Maryland doesn't require viciousness.
I didn't say it did.
No.
That's how you were describing it.
And that's my characterization of what I see. But
okay. You're
obviously, all of us, are free to disagree. But what is required is physical injury and unlawful touching. The deputy documented that and then made the decision to handcuff.
What are we to make of the fact that she so quickly took those handcuffs off the little girl? 2 minutes into it, she took them off. What do you say about that?
I call it an act of compassion. She could have kept her in handcuffs pursuant to the Fourth Amendment, pursuant to departmental procedure. It's not as if she took the handcuffs off and said, I'm not punishing you any longer, you're free to go. She made the decision in consultation with the vice principal, reached out to the child's mother, explained that she would treat the matter now as non-custodial, and that's what she did. Released the child to the mother, contacted juvenile services directly with the paperwork. It was an act, I think, that shouldn't be punished.
What was the justification, do you assert, for the handcuffs in the first instance? What was the justification from the record?
From the record, again, I go back to paragraph 9 of really the only...
You take somebody into custody, you handcuff them.
Yes.
I guess the policy says you may.
You may. It's discretion.
Saying an excessive force case of handcuffs requires you to be injured?
I'm sorry, Your Honor.
You're saying it's excessive force is required that you be injured with the handcuffs? Isn't the force itself the handcuff?
No.
It requires injury?
I think it is accepted that an officer has the ability to utilize handcuffs in the course of an arrest under the Fourth Amendment if there's probable cause. If the officer uses those handcuffs in a way that causes injury or is designed to inflict pain, then you would have a violation of the Fourth Amendment.
Well, it did cause injury. We said the little girl went screaming. That's injury.
No evidence of anything other than tears and saying, I don't want to go to jail. I won't do it again. There was no physical injury.
It doesn't. You're saying it would require physical injury.
Yes. Yes. Otherwise, you would have an excessive force claim anytime someone claimed emotional trauma from being handcuffed pursuant to an arrest for which it was probable cause.
Your adversary said that I asked him those questions. That he said the excessive force claim here is based on the use of the handcuffs in this circumstance.
Correct.
The use of
them. Yes. And again, we come back to that issue that Judge Wynn started off with. It is not clearly established today.
But I want to interrupt you.
I
want to follow up on the line of question.
Right.
I asked you why the handcuffs were used.
Yes.
I thought, as I read the facts, I thought part of that was she would take her into custody. And I thought there was some concern about she didn't use this word, and I don't mean anything by it other than just to say her kind of being obdurate, her attitude.
Yes.
I don't want to overstate that. Maybe I'm wrong, but I thought
it played
some role in it.
It's the following paragraph in the affidavit where the deputy testified that she was concerned for the physical safety of all persons present. She had observed the child on the video physically attack another student on a moving bus. The child seemed unconcerned by the seriousness of what had taken place and what might occur. The deputy believed there was a possibility that the child could physically act out against her or anyone else nearby as we left the school to reach the patrol car. She was the only deputy present. This was a 10-year-old fifth grader.
So I see. I see when the policy is you may use cuffs, she then explains her justification for doing so.
Yes.
Is that it?
Correct. Your Honors, my time is running short, but I want to come back to, I think, a very essential point made by Chief Judge Gregory. And I don't want the court to come away thinking that I believe that the handcuffing of a child in a school setting or otherwise is something to be taken lightly. I do not. I believe it requires incredibly close scrutiny under the Fourth Amendment. In cases like CB versus City of Sonora, in Alexander versus Bostic, the 11th Circuit case from 2006, where the deputy used the cuffs by pulling the child's arms behind his back and saying, this is how it feels when you break the law. This is how it feels to be in jail, even though the child had done nothing in the way of a crime.
You can't do that.
You can't do that.
No.
I agree.
But is that clearly established in the Fourth Circuit? Maybe you can.
Maybe you can.
If that's the standard, you can't. It's not established in the Fourth Circuit.
The difference here, Your Honor.
I mean, and I think you can look at other circuits, and there are cases that talk about that. But that's another matter. But I'm glad you brought that up, because you know what? In terms of an American, there are plenty of studies done. It's called the school-to-prison pipeline. That is what used to be like at the water fountain. You push somebody. Okay, listen, detention, you don't go to lunch. Now call the police, and these kids get jacketed with records in detention early on, and it puts them on an incredible trajectory. And it talks about handcuffing, the impact on it. There's studies that talk about the poor performance. To say 2 minutes for a kid, 10-year-old handcuffed, that does not traumatize them, it's almost like, well, what is that? You used to it. I mean, it's not about 2 minutes. No, these are children. They're tender just like anybody else's children. And I think people would be outraged in suburban areas that their children, was just, what do you mean? How do you handcuff a 10-year-old? And I think we take some liberties to say, oh, it was just 2 minutes. She started crying. That is traumatic for a child. Yes. And it has an impact on their academic ability. And you call it police. And you said the police thought, like, I thought I was going, there's going to be some danger here that she was going, what, swing on me? And there are no facts to even support a conclusion like that. But otherwise, if that's the law, you could say, well, the person acting calm, I know they're calm now, but I just know in a minute now they're just going to go off. What would be the standard?
Your Honor, the standard is probable cause. And that's what this officer had.
Is it a felony? Is that a felony?
No, Your Honor.
So it's misdemeanor.
It is a misdemeanor.
Allegedly occurring outside the presence of the officer.
Yes,
right?
And in Street versus Serdica, this court in 1974 held that there was no presence requirement appended to the Fourth Amendment.
Right.
This court has reaffirmed that position as recently as 2008. The issue of presence has long since been waived, but under the Fourth Amendment, it's not required. The difference between this case and
Sonora. I'm talking about the concept, the reason why I said presence, because yes. Trying to give some credit.
Yes.
What's this conclusion? It was a present and clear danger, I thought. I don't know where that's coming from, other than the fact that she just didn't act like that. She didn't present, I think it was called an attitude.
That officer never used that word.
Well, I just thought somebody, okay, but what was the word to you?
I'm reading, let me go back to her affidavit.
How did they describe what the girl was doing?
Yes.
Other than sitting down in the room.
She said that she didn't seem to realize, basically, that there was anything wrong with what she had done, that the juvenile, the third grader, stepped on my shoe, so I kicked her and started to hit her. When I asked EW how many times, she said she didn't know, but said more than five. So basically what she told the deputy was, I didn't do anything wrong, and she asked for what she got. So the deputy didn't say that was an attitude or something that needed correcting.
So that didn't play at all in terms of the handcuffing, right?
Oh, I think that would be a mischaracterization.
That was a question.
Yes.
I didn't characterize anything.
Yes.
I asked you a question.
I think it went in to the totality of the circumstances informing her discretion to exercise, in this case, to use handcuffs on this juvenile. That is the key difference between this and the cases where handcuffs are used to intimidate and punish. Those cases that have been found to be in violation of the Fourth Amendment, the officers were not acting on reasonable suspicion, much less probable cause. And that is the difference here. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you, Mr. Breeze. Mr. Cocky, you have a few minutes left.
Your Honor, what the departmental policies say, and I quote, the vast majority of juvenile offenders are likely candidates for non-secure custody and positive diversion and intervention strategies. I'm quoting from page 39 of the joint appendix. And then, as Mr. Breed says, the policies do go on to say that you have the discretion to handcuff juveniles. And I'm now looking at page 47 through 48 of the appendix. But it says, you do all the things the Supreme Court says you're supposed to do. You look at the physical safety of the persons involved. You look at the physique of the juvenile, reputation for violence, conduct at the time of arrest. In short, what I suggest are very well-established Fourth Amendment principles are actually codified in the department's own policies. The deputy says she was an 18-year veteran. She'd spent 12 of those years as a school resource officer. So she would have imbibed this jurisprudence through reading her own policies, which she attaches as an exhibit to her affidavit. So certainly, in my view, it was not established as a matter of law that the deputy had qualified immunity. I think that remains an open question, and I would ask that this court remand the case with instructions that the case proceed with the district court, and I thank you for your time.
All right. Thank you very much.